I'm Anna Horford, and you're listening to the Celtics Life podcast.
Welcome inside the Celtics Life podcast. I'm Justin Quinn, and with the Boston Celtics headed to London this week, we thought we'd take a look at Celtics fandom around the world as seen through the eyes of our two international writers here at Celtics Life, myself and Josh Coyne, as well as our special guest, Cameron, I'm going to try this, Tabatabai?
Yeah, pretty good.
Of Celtics Hub. Great. How's it going?
It's going good. Hello from Melbourne, Australia.
And hello from Leicester, the United Kingdom.
And for those of you who are unaware, I am currently in Mexico City, thus being an international writer thing. It's been quite a challenge to get us all together, considering how far apart we are in the whole time zone thing. It's been quite the challenge.
Even from an organization point of view, I consider this an absolute triumph, and we haven't even started yet.
I'm pretty proud of us.
I agree completely. So we have a lot of stateside writers, you know, all over the country. We've got guys in Los Angeles. We've got guys locally in Boston, in the southern New England area, Rhode Island. We've got guys in Michigan. We've got guys in Arizona. It's definitely become a very dispersed kind of fandom in a way that is really surprising when you consider that it is a very localized fandom for most teams. Like, very few teams have the same kind of reach. I mean, like, you could say, like, the Lakers and the Bulls and some of the more popular teams that won a lot of championships have, but we definitely have something as Celtics fans. A lot of other teams don't.
Well, they were saying, I was speaking to a lot of the UK writers that I speak to on a podcast recently, and they were saying that they were expecting a majority of green in the arena this week on Thursday night for the London game at the O2 Arena. And I was a little bit shocked by the fact that supposedly it's a real popular opinion that Celtics kind of monopolized the UK market in terms of NBA support, because I've always still felt like I was on a bit of an island and still a bit of a cult member, to be honest, over here. It's a little bit like being a fanatic soccer fan of, I don't know, like Tottenham Hotspur whilst being over in the States. So, yeah, for me, it still felt like I was part of a cult, but supposedly we're massively popular over here. What about in Australia?
It's actually fantastic to be an NBA fan in Australia. The timing is all off. It's really difficult to watch games, but they love it here. Wherever you go, Melbourne in particular is a very casual place, and so walking around in an NBA jersey seems pretty commonplace. And it's like being in a music festival. You pretty much any jersey you can think of, you can find. Yesterday, I served someone at the restaurant I work at wearing an away Amari Stoudemire jersey. So there's definitely, I would say the Celtics are easily in the top five of most popular teams. And like you said before, the Lakers are right up there too. But people really flex in terms of jerseys and gear here. And it's really funny to see what's resonated, because I can't remember the last time I saw an Amari Stoudemire jersey, let alone I found it in Australia.
He's really popular in Israel for going over there and playing when he had that time off from the league.
Right. Well, that makes sense to me, but it's not even, well, actually, there's a TGI Fridays in downtown here, and they have a framed Patty Mills jersey. So the Australians definitely look after their own, but yeah, people just love the NBA here, and I can't definitively say what team has the biggest following, but certainly the Celtics are up there.
I'm curious how all of us became Boston Celtics fans.
For me, I grew up, my mum and dad played basketball, which, as I've already expressed, is quite a unique hobby over here. Not even really in the top 10 in terms of domestic sport popularity. And they played from me being very young. So I watched a lot of basketball when I was really young, basically going around with my parents. But as a byproduct of that, I was turned on to a lot of Larry Bird highlights. And then around 06, I started getting it. I mean, this is a real kind of millennial way to be influenced, but I got into the NBA 2K franchise probably around 2006, and that gave me a real kick. And of course, I was choosing the Celtics at every opportunity. And from then on, it was basically into the rabbit hole, and there's literally no way out by now.
I was born in Boston, so my Celtics fandom's pretty linear. I will parrot that I think video games had an astounding impact on me keeping up with sports fandom, just because I wasn't always the biggest sports fan growing up. And actually, the Celtics really endeared me. I give Walter McCarty a lot of credit for keeping me in the loop. I remember playing in a basketball league and scoring like maybe a basket a game. And after the game, telling myself, like, that's okay. Walter McCarty sometimes only scores like a basket or two. Like, you just got to help when you can. So I grew up in Boston. So that was pretty easy. But the players themselves definitely kept me engaged.
I would mirror that. I'd actually react to that and say that not only did the video games have a big influence in terms of keeping you interested, but I actually think they taught you quite a lot. Because if you've got no real direct exposure to the game and you're going play by play through something, especially as they got more realistic, you start to really then become interested in what really to me is the most interesting thing about basketball, and that's the nuance and that's the kind of intricate tactical adjustments, things like that. And yeah, I would credit that to a lot of my kind of obsession beginning.
That actually has been a pretty big part of what kept me interested in basketball. I also grew up near Boston. I am originally from Eastern Connecticut, and I am pushing 42. I'll be 42 in a few weeks. I became a basketball fan. I'll say I was a casual fan, you know, at the tail end of like the Larry Bird years, which were still good to watch, but he really was, you know, fighting through the back stuff at that period of time. So like, you know, they weren't winning any championships anymore. This is the late 80s, 88, 89, 90. We all know what happened next, you know, the wilderness years, and it was just miserable. Luckily for me, I had the UConn Huskies coming into their own at that time to hold my interest through that really, really difficult period for Celtics fans. As I got older, I became less interested in the tribal aspect of it and more interested in the nuts and bolts, X's and Y's elements of it. And then after the breakdown of the new Big Three era and trying to understand how Danny Ainge was going to take that magic and like put it in some kind of like a battery, if you will, in terms of like draft picks and trades and whatnot, like trying to understand the rules of how he could possibly do that got me into the salary cap and all kinds of minutiae that probably bores most of our listeners. But for me, at least, it's one of the things that has added to my fandom in a way that really video games haven't, just because as a PhD student, I have almost no time for video games or really anything. Kind of sucks.
Well, I know this is a podcast about international fandom, but for whatever it's worth, the way that 2K breaks down like pretending to be a GM or an owner actually I think makes all of the finances and backdoor stuff, it's oversimplified, but it also makes it really accessible. So again, this isn't really a podcast about video games, so we can move on, but
no, it's still interesting and relevant, I think.
And actually, yeah, I'm sure Josh, like you said, there are people around the world for whom a new window into the NBA is offered by video games. So if we get a listener from the 2K franchise, keep up the good work, guys. Thanks for all of the fun.
But I would continue on what you say, Justin, as well, in the sense that from a transactional point of view, I agree that once you become obsessed with the kind of like Danny Ainge from when the Big Three broke down, when you had to kind of stop focusing so much on team affairs and more on franchise affairs, where he basically was playing a really complex game of Monopoly, where he could have made mistakes. He possibly nearly did make a lot of mistakes, but ultimately he's got us to this situation where we are now from making bold business decisions. And once you become obsessed with that, I don't really think there's a way out of basketball fandom. I think that's when you've truly buried your head in it.
I think all three of us have. So I'm curious if you guys are okay with sharing this, and you're totally cool if you don't want to, how we got where we are and what else we do besides write. You know, I'm sure the listeners don't want any, like, you know, detailed biographies or anything like that, but I'm always curious when I see, you know, fellow Celtics writers out there and sports writers in general, like, what else is going on in their lives?
Josh, you go first.
Okay, well, I have always been kind of, well, from a day-to-day basis, I work in sales, and you can get me on the phone. No, I'm only joking. So I work in sales, but then in terms of what I do when I get home and what I kind of work towards and what I really enjoy is, generally speaking, it's always been the creative stuff. So from a young age, I was always into writing certain things, and I'm into producing music, things like that. And for that reason alone, then I just really get a kick out of creating something and putting it out to the world. And a lot of what, you know, journalism and podcasts and things like that, that's what it is. You know, it's a creative pursuit. What actually got me into it is I had a word with someone who I know is a really good writer, who basically just said, start blogging, blog, and keep writing all you can, get involved with people who interest you. And from then on, it'll build. And for that reason, I found myself at Celtics Life, who, yeah, massively helpful avenue and a good group of people. And I also just write for basically various websites, UK-based websites, things like that. And yeah, that's basically where I got to here.
My story's a little different. I was studying the environment in college, which I guess lends itself to a little bit of writing, but writing was not necessarily a trade skill of mine or anything. And I happened to know Brian Robb from way back when, and at the time he was managing Celtics Hub. I reached out to him, and he was very kind enough to give me a shot. And so I started writing for Celtics Hub. And actually kind of the opposite happened, that I got into this rhythm of writing. And for a year, I was working in an elementary school, something I loved, but, you know, wasn't that there were some dead ends there because I didn't have a degree in it. I ended up landing a marketing job that centered around writing. And I could talk about what I was doing at Celtics Hub in this job interview, something that I didn't really have experience for. And so then my schedule became marketing during the day and Celtics Hub at night. Heading back to the international theme, that company downsized. And so I used that opportunity to decide to go on this Australian adventure. So now I work at, actually it's funny, I work at a restaurant here, and it's New Orleans themed. An Australian guy had a Sazerac and loved it so much he went to New Orleans, and then he loved that so much he opened this restaurant. So now I'm a Pelicans fan, and that's great. But yeah, no, I do still do Celtics Hub when I can, just because I love it. I'm writing for an Australian website here called The Pick and Roll, and that's really just because I like writing about basketball. It's fun. It makes watching basketball a little more engaging and a little more challenging. So yeah, it started as a hobby, and then it became an asset on my resume, and now it's still a hobby.
I actually found my way into writing about basketball from several friends who do the same thing. It just kind of felt like a natural extension of what I do when I'm not writing about basketball, which, as I hinted at earlier, is anthropology. I'm a PhD student in anthropology. I study how people represent their transportation needs here in Mexico, which is how I ended up in Mexico. I met my wife here. I'm going through a very exciting process of dealing with immigration, which anyone who's ever dealt with immigration in any country can probably vouch for the fact that if there's anything out there that is less fun than the Department of Motor Vehicles, that is it. Another thing that I found about writing about basketball in general, too, and this kind of got to what you were saying about the Pelicans, I've become a bit more basketball agnostic. I used to be like the most rabid UConn Huskies fan and the most tribal Boston Celtics fan in my late teens and early 20s, and like that mellowed out a bit, but it really mellowed out to the point where now when I'm watching games, like I would just have the worst time ever if we were losing a game, and like I still get upset, but it's definitely modified, you know, not just how like I feel about games, but how I feel about basketball in general. And I tend to follow players once they leave the Celtics or for example, my Huskies fandom has me following the Detroit Pistons and Charlotte Hornets and other teams that end up with UConn players on them. And I'll root for them as well. Like, not the way that I root for the Celtics, so don't crucify me if you're listening. I do still place the Celtics as like my primary team that I focus on, and not just because I write about them, just because I have this irrational connection because of the spot on the planet I happen to have been born. Overall, I definitely have appreciated what writing has done to how I consume basketball.
Yeah, I think as soon as it goes back to what we said before, I think, about how you start to think more about the business side of things and the kind of what the NBA actually represents. And I think that once you kind of you have that perspective, I think that you then start to be less tribal, as you mentioned before, and you start to think about it in a more kind of progressive way. And I think as soon as you do that, you start to actually enjoy the game overall, besides just kind of specific team affairs.
So you are headed to the Global Games?
Yeah, on Thursday, I'm going to the game at the O2 Arena, basically the premier arena for sporting events in the United Kingdom. We're getting a visit from a couple of basketball teams, one of which is the mighty Boston Celtics. And I've been doing a lot of talking about it and writing about it in the last week or so. Obviously going to be a good matchup, as everyone's going to kind of raise their game. I'm sure that guys like Embiid and Simmons are going to try and to make a name for themselves over here even more. But yeah, the event itself is great. Generally speaking, I've talked to a few people about it and stated that the atmosphere is sometimes strange because you've got that kind of neutral. There's no real kind of, no one's pulling, no massive majority is pulling one side or the other. So therefore it creates a kind of impartial echo around the arena. That's pretty good. There's a lot of kind of upset about the ticketing situation since the tickets went out, because there's been a lot of resale sites that
really
have been
prices, I've heard.
Yeah, they've been taking advantage of it. And I've said this on a couple of other occasions, in the sense that I'm heading over to Boston in February, and the flight and the ticket to the two games is the same price as some of the remaining tickets, which are in the upper tier. So kind of nosebleeds, to be honest. But aside from that, it's going to be a hell of a spectacle. I'll be going early in the afternoon, going for shoot around. Hopefully I'm going to be getting into the pre and post game press conferences, and I'll be at the game. So yeah, really excited about it.
Josh, can I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
As unbiased as you can be, how would you compare the hype to this game versus when the NFL comes to London?
Okay, yeah, that's a really good question. I have a lot. The problem is we all kind of live in the same way that like our sense of hope for like political decisions is shaped by our social media bubble. I think that a lot of the same kind of thinking happened for this kind of thing. So, for example, I do have a lot of friends who are into the NFL. So on Facebook, I will see a lot of NFL hype because all of my friends are into the NFL. So I'll see a lot of the build up to that. And also, they have a lot more games in the NFL. So I actually think, in terms of a single game hype, especially with the media, this is much more intense than the NFL has been. But I'd say that the NFL is becoming more of a household name due to the regularity of it. And also, kind of, I guess, the similarities between the NFL, and it kind of crosses over with rugby and football a little bit as well. But it's definitely growing massively in the UK, and the interest is definitely intensifying. But I would say, in my social media bubble on Twitter, where all I care about is basketball and music, I would say that the hype has been crazy.
Fair enough.
Now, in Mexico, we do have both sports visiting here. I didn't get to see the Celtics this year. They had, I think it was the San Antonio Spurs and the Brooklyn Nets and one other team, the Suns, I want to say, came. So I didn't go this year. I like those teams, but not enough to make the trip out to the stadium, Stadium Azteca. But when the NFL came, I'm not an NFL fan, so I wasn't too interested. But, I mean, they really went crazy here. Like, there's a major street called Reforma Avenue, and that street had commissioned, like, government-commissioned football, designer football helmets with, a Mexican touch to each team in the NFL going all the way down as an art installation.
Oh, I think I saw that on Twitter.
It was crazy. The NFL needs to, the NBA needs to take a book or page out of the NFL's book and try doing stuff like that for promotional stuff. It was really interesting. And I don't really have an accurate way to measure which sport is more popular in Mexico. There might be some research out there, but to me, at least, it seems that they're about equal in terms of how often I see somebody wearing, a jersey or a hat on the subway or on the street. But in terms of institutional support, the NFL definitely seems to have a bit of a lead. And I'm not sure how long they've been coming here in terms of global games. I think the first one I can remember was about 2011 or so. But at least for now, I think that probably the NFL has at least a little bit of a lead, at least in terms of support. There is some talk around the NBA that expansion might end up happening, with Mexico City being a potential option now that the key arena renovation for the Seattle Supersonics making a comeback to the league, potentially, if everything goes right, with an endpoint goal of 2020. So if Mexico City is a realistic target, which I think it is, I think that's probably the soonest we would see any kind of an expansion. But I'm curious to hear your guys' idea of what expansion might look like if it happens, and your opinion about whether it will even happen at all.
I think it's funny. The Las Vegas Golden Knights can just pop up and be a thing in the NHL. And I know the scale of the business is a little different. I don't think that the owners or the league itself is going to care too much about, first of all, balance. 31 teams is a weird number of teams. But if there's money to be had, I think the league will do it. And just the way that the league is trending nationally and internationally, I imagine the money is there. So I imagine it's coming. From my point of view, I think the investments in the G League are really interesting. But I don't know that we have enough talent to field 32 teams right now. I think if you look at kind of some of the teams that aren't doing so hot in the league, there are a few outstanding players, but maybe not enough to warrant 30 more players in the league. So selfishly, I don't really like the idea of expansion. I think that the league is sort of competitive enough or maybe even at its wit's end with competitiveness. But I don't want to deny the good people of Seattle or Mexico City the right to root for a basketball team. So, yeah, I don't really feel strongly that they should expand, but I will be really excited when they do, kind of at the same time. Also, just for a note, I said root for, and I guess in Australia, to say that you root for the Celtics means something very different than it does elsewhere in the world. So if you're ever in Australia, you don't root for the Celtics, you go for the Celtics or cheer for the Celtics, because otherwise you're saying something that's a little dirty.
I don't think the Celtics need you to do that on their behalf. in terms of the by the way, people can Google that if they listen, because we're not going to say it. But I'm not massively opposed to expansion. I think that before expansion, however, they need to take a kind of really long look. And I'm not going to name any names, because generally speaking, I don't think it's fair, because teams go up and down in terms of business, and it's usually team related in terms of performance. But there are so many teams that struggle for numbers on a weekly basis. And it's not a great model. Obviously, teams are getting better at doing so, filling the arena, the branding isn't spot on. But when you know for sure that there's cities like Seattle and potentially Mexico that would, it would be a mecca, you know, for the city, a sporting mecca for the city. And it's a little bit difficult to consider expansion in my mind when you know that there's already arenas that are half full on a nightly basis, and kind of dwindling business for the franchises.
Yeah, that is definitely a major concern. Cities like New Orleans, which, you know, has lost its team before, and like Memphis, between what they've done to themselves in terms of their roster and just their general problem filling seats, as well as what you mentioned, Cam, with the talent issue, it's a real problem, and I'm not really sure what the answer is, because some of that talent, and I'm not saying, you know, the top tier talent, obviously, but some of that talent is going overseas to Europe and to China and also even increasingly to Australia. So in my mind, they're dealing with this issue where they have kind of keep ahead of the Joneses, as it were, in terms of other competing leagues as the sports global profile grows with the NBA. But then also those issues of talent dilution are not, you know, just a talking point that, you know, people who don't want foreign teams to happen use. It's a real thing. And I'm not really sure what to do about it. I do see how Mexico, here in Mexico City, there already is a pro league. It's got a very low level of talent. It's probably about equivalent to some of the worst leagues in Europe, for people to understand, probably around the same general level as a college basketball level of talent. If you have three or four NBA level talent ever playing on the court at one time, then that's a pretty good game. But they're taking a very cautious approach in Mexico. They just started up a academy to try to drum up some very few people go into playing basketball here, kind of like with you, Josh, over in the United Kingdom. Most people obviously are shunted off towards soccer or other sports. So really, I mean, though people do play basketball here and you know, in schools and whatnot, it's not a focus in the same way that it is in the United States and a lot of other places. So like they did in India to this similar end, to try to get more people who end up in other sports or end up in no sports involved in the sport, they've opened up an academy here. And there's already talk about either here or in Monterrey opening another G League team, potentially as soon as this upcoming season, like not the one that we're in, but the one that's coming after, obviously. So to me, that spells like a very slow approach that will allow them to kind of pivot on a dime if it doesn't look like it's going to work, or some kind of major obstacle, like, I don't know, a wall that ends up popping up in the interim. So, I mean, that's something to keep an eye on. But if Mexico, Australia, and the United Kingdom somehow ended up in the NBA, what would they call the teams?
Because of my feeling towards some of the names in the NBA, I don't think I would even imagine a good name. So all of the effort I would put into trying to think of a good name and get creative, I know for sure that they'd end up calling them like the British Bulldogs or something, because at the end of the day, we've got an NBA team called the Pelicans. So, you know.
Yeah, man. You know, I was really down on that before somebody put out an explainer for it, basically explaining to everyone just how badass Pelicans are. And as a longtime Florida resident, it's not untrue. It's not the worst.
I kind of like it that someone I work with here is from New Orleans, and he's resentful that they pulled the city on what they should call the team name, and then they just went with what the daughter wanted, the owner's daughter. So knowing the history, that's a little bit of a bummer. Josh, I like British Bulldogs. I thought
it's kind of good. It's kind of good.
Okay, well, we need to keep this archive then. For what, if one day it happens, then I'm definitely making some money from it. Yeah. And also, I guess the old wrestler called the British Bulldog would have to claim some money as well.
Maybe he could like talk before the games or something. To answer your question, though, for a Mexico City team, I think the best answer is the Jaguars, just because Jaguars are the Jaguar Warriors in Aztec culture, would look so good on a jersey. I guess there's already a Jaguar team in professional sports, so there's a precedent. I also wrote down the Quetzals. Bear with me, this is going to get nerdy. Quetzalcoatlus was a major god, maybe the major god in Aztec culture. There's also a really awesome pterosaur, the flying reptiles from the dinosaur age, called Quetzalcoatlus. It's kind of ugly looking, but I would love to see that as a mascot.
Really?
So yeah, I think Jaguars would be pretty fitting. Selfishly like the term Quetzal. But I think Mexico has all sorts of things it could run with. Something involving like a Day of the Dead skull would look really good.
I guess the calaveras, yeah, that would be good.
I guess they just have to tread the line of you can't appropriate things. But then again, if the team is run by Mexican investors, then I guess it's up to them. The Celtics logo is appropriated and kind of horrible if you think about it.
I've actually struggled with that quite a bit. Quinn is probably not that miraculously of Irish descent, and you know, like stage Irish, which is, it's been a thing for so long that, you know, Lucky the Leprechaun and Irish yoga, as it's called, which is basically a derogative term for passing out in all kinds of ridiculous positions. There's some pretty problematic stuff attached to what is generally looked at as innocuous Irish culture. And I mean, at least our leprechaun is a little bit less racially stereotyped than Notre Dame.
Yeah, the Notre Dame one is tough.
That, I guess.
Well, my family come ever since I was very young. I've been going back and forth to Ireland because when you think of the romanticized idea of Ireland, kind of the Father Ted style Ireland, is the kind of rural mountains house, five mountains, then another house, that kind of. Yeah,
sad roof.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of where my family's from, and I go and visit a lot. And I just need to say that the way in which, like you've already touched on, the way in which Irish culture is celebrated by Americans is obviously exaggerated, like tenfold. It's crazy. St. Patrick's Day, much more of a major event over there. Much more. It's hyper version of what St. Patrick's Day actually is in Ireland, and that actually has always been funny to me. But in terms of the appropriated logo and things like that, the imagery, I truly think, from my experience, and this may be an inaccurate statement based on just what I know from family and what I know from people I've met in Dublin and over in Galway, is that I truly don't think they'd give a shit about the appropriation of the leprechaun.
I kind of have gotten the same general feeling too.
It doesn't seem like the problems that plagued Irish Americans exist in the same way. The NBA.
Not anymore, anyway.
Right. The NBA is so good with optics and reacting to the culture at large that there's no way they would mess up whatever a move to Mexico would look like by picking an insensitive mascot. But I suppose, as someone who's never been to Mexico and only knows so much about Mexican culture, I'd be worried that you could come up with some rough ideas, but hopefully a Day of the Dead themed team could. I mean, Coco, that Pixar movie, it looks like they did a phenomenal job of breathing life into the whole holiday. So I'm sure there's a way an NBA team could do it in the same way. And I think Day of the Dead skulls on an NBA jersey would look really good.
I would definitely buy myself one. I mean, calaveras are a unique cultural symbol here in Mexico. Calaveras are skulls. Those like the sugar candy skull things you see from Day of the Dead. I don't think that if it was a, you know, U.S. team, that would be very problematic. But I personally don't think something like that would be received poorly here, considering it is celebrating Mexico from a Mexican perspective. I don't think it would ever get to the point, as you were saying, where if it was viewed problematic locally, I'm sure they would do focus groups and that sort of thing just to make sure that they weren't inadvertently about to create a major shitstorm for themselves to deal with debuting what is really a really risky move. Yes, the reason why they're even considering Mexico City in the first place is that not only is it a 30 million head media market, but really it's also a beachhead into all of Latin America, because there are no other, you know, foreign teams besides the Toronto Raptors, and that's just one country. So it's not like there's a bunch of countries north of Canada that share a lot in common culturally, particularly language-wise, for them to tune in and hear someone speaking in their own language and the NBA is also looking at that as a means for getting more exposure in Latin American markets that mostly broadcast soccer. Like when I go into a bar here in Mexico City, you can't really see NBA unless it's the playoffs or a marquee matchup game. But if you just want to see like the Celtics versus the Nets or just any kind of like a regular season game, you either have to ask or you have to find your own way to watch it. Which brings me to something else I wanted to ask you guys about. Now, Cam, you mentioned something about what you do or what you have to do to see games because of the time difference. And I know, Josh, you also deal with something like that. But for me here, there's just no broadcasting anywhere. So really, my options are League Pass borrowed from a friend or very, very completely legal, I am sure, because I found them on Reddit, and Reddit never, ever links you to anything bad, NBA streams. What do you guys do when you want to watch games?
I'll let Cam take this one, and then I'll explain.
So, options for League Pass are limited. Every Australian that I've met has had so many different ways to illegally watch television here, none of which I would partake in. But a lot of people I've talked to, I forget what League Pass is at home, but it's on the order of $350 a year, $400 a year to pay for it in Australia. So I've been recommended getting a VPN, which masks your computer's IP address, and then buying Canadian League Pass, which is cheaper. So that was like the chief recommendation to me from people who wanted me to be able to watch basketball games. There are a few bars that peg themselves as international sports bars that you can go to. So, for example, the Patriots playoff games, I can go there and reliably watch it on TV or a big NBA game. I don't know if they have League Pass. I can't imagine. And then otherwise, I've been told there are ways to watch NBA games online. And I've been told that sometimes you end up watching a French broadcast. And sometimes that's just the way it is.
You've been told a lot of things, Cam. I mean, one day maybe you'll act on one of these things. You've definitely just been told.
We have two in one mouth, so we can listen to twice as much as we say.
So I've got League Pass. So generally speaking, I can watch every game. But the problem is obviously the time. So generally speaking, an early usual tip-off when it's not the weekend would be 12 o'clock, so midnight here. And sometimes I used to stay up a lot more, especially when I was a student, of course, because your sleeping pattern is out of whack. But I used to stay up, but now what I'll do is I'll wake up early, especially for kind of every Celtics game, and I'll watch the entire game by waking up about 2 hours earlier than I would for work. And then when I'm home, I'll watch various kind of usually condensed some full games around the league. But yeah, it's a challenge in terms of time. Funnily enough, I just saw Taz Melis of the Starters. He just shared I didn't see him. I may see him over NBA London, but he shared a screenshot of his app, his viewing app, and he said that I was just astounded by the tip-off times of live games when I went onto the app. So he's just kind of, he's in London and he's just getting used to the time zone, and he's received nothing but snarky comments like, yeah, well, this is what we have to go through, so get used to it, kind of thing.
Yeah, for me, it's not a very big deal because I'm basically just in Central Time because I'm south.
Well, yeah, any West Coast games, it's like 2-3 a.m. So I basically will never watch any of those games live unless it's the playoffs.
Yeah, games, East Coast Celtics game will come on at 11 or 11:30 in the morning the day after it's supposed to happen. So when I'm not working, it's as easy as getting on my computer. But most people in the world are, I guess not most people. Actually, young people here work a lot in hospitality, so maybe that's why everyone has an NBA jersey. But it's a middle of the day, have your lunch and watch a basketball game kind of affair.
So what are your peers, like your the people you work with, the people you hang out with? I mean, are they also NBA? Like you said, a lot of people in the service industry are into the NBA, or at least wear NBA jerseys. I mean, do you actually find that the people that you are around in your respective home, well, I guess they are hometown now, at least for all of us. Like, what is it like for them to be around you being, I think it's pretty safe to say all three of us are basketball obsessed.
I have a few people or friends here that they might know more about the mid-2000s NBA than I do. It seems like young people, so I'm in my mid-20s, so people that I'm hanging out with, that they're keeping up just about as much as I am. I mean, again, we know the nerdy behind-the-scenes stuff, but when Carmelo Anthony drops a hard MF bomb on TV, Australians know about it too because of social media and whatnot. So I find that at least a lot of the people I talk to are keeping up in the same way that if you go to a bar, not everyone in the U.S. is up to date on what's happening with the NBA. I did have a job interview where the guy asked me about the Golden Gate Warriors. So maybe some Australians are lying about how much they like the NBA, but on the whole, at least again for my peers in their mid-20s or so, the same proportion of my friends probably like the NBA with about the same ferocity.
For me, it's perplexing, I guess, confusing. They're not as in tune with it. Everyone I work with is football obsessed. Everyone kind of, there'll be events, there'll be cricket events. I'm sure Cam's hearing a lot about the cricket at the moment. Because our countries are at loggerheads against each other in the cricket. So there'll be events but football dominates. Rugby as well in my hometown kind of is a big thing. But all I'll get really is questions, really. And there'll be kind of feigned interest sometimes. A lot of people really into it. A lot of my close friends really into it, just as much as me, just like Cam said, really obsessed. But in terms of when you go out into the world, the workplace, it's not a household name. There'll be questions. There'll be, like I said, feigned interest and kind of little nuggets of knowledge. Like LeBron James is a good basketball player, isn't he?
Yeah. That's about the level of the interest I find mostly around Mexico City. I do occasionally run into people in probably more logical places. Like, for example, there's a guy who is the biggest Chicago Bulls fan. And, you know, me finding him in a gym and him being a Chicago Bulls fan, because Chicago is one of the main destination cities for Mexican migrants, that kind of makes sense. Generally speaking, though, for the same reason that you noted, that it's not a major sport here. It's more of an event when we find each other through, you know, various sports paraphernalia being visible out in the street. So it's really hard for me to get a good feel. I think maybe with more time, I'll have a better idea. I've only been here about 2 years now.
Yeah, I think it's only going to get better. It's so wild to me that the MLB and the NFL have been so dismissive of Twitter and what social media can bring for exposure. I think the NBA does such a good job of making itself accessible that if there's an interest in any corner of the world, you can follow up and be an NBA fan these days. So I can only imagine that the NBA world is shrinking pretty rapidly.
So I wanted to leave us with a question before we go. Given we're all speaking to each other from different sides of the globe, how does that line up with Kyrie's views of its shape? Have we proved him wrong? Right? Is the Earth actually round? What are your thoughts?
If I was to try and attempt to go and visit Cameron right now, based on that theory, I would be extremely worried about falling off the edge of the Earth. So that's all I'd say.
I think that going to school outside of Boston and now living abroad has made me a happier sports fan. I feel like there's less tribalism in my heart, and I feel hard. It's harder for me to hate or feel disdain for an NBA player. If it wasn't Kyrie Irving peddling flat earth stuff, I think I would be so upset and angry. Maybe it's just the moment of time we're in the country and in the world, but it seems like he believes it or like refuses to let the joke die. And there's a certain amount of pain in my soul because of that. Also, he was born in Melbourne, Australia, and flew on a big airplane around the world to get to where he is now. And I don't know. I'm at my wit's end with the flat earth stuff. It's funny. It's frustrating. It's stupid. It's all of those things. If Kyrie ever gives us a listen, please reach out to me and we can talk about the science behind and the math, more importantly, about why the earth is round. Like, has he ever met an astronaut? Can't they just be like, hey, I've been outside of Earth and I can see it and now you're being great? Like, that's insane to me. I don't know. Sorry.
He definitely doesn't believe it. He definitely doesn't believe it. He's kind of, even from quotes today, he makes kind of a conscious attempt to be kind of a pseudo intellectual. So every answer he'll kind of carve to make it sound kind of mysterious. And kind of make himself sound like a bit of a Renaissance man. I love him as a basketball player and, you know, what he's done here in Boston. And he's got my full support, but not when it comes to science. Theorizing scientific certainty.
Yeah, he's got to cut that one out of his repertoire. Off air, Justin and I were talking, and Josh, you should, and anyone listening should. The Guardian had an interview with Jaylen Brown where he discussed everything from race relations to how sports relates to culture at large. He is not a pseudo-intellectual. Jaylen Brown is a very smart young man, and I recommend reading that. And Kyrie Irving, I bet you are a smart man too. I would rid yourself of the chains of the Flat Earth Society and start anew, because that shtick is old.
Can I just comment on that, the Jaylen Brown piece? So, I know via social media, I know the writer who did that. He's a great profile writer. His name's Donald McRae. He's a legendary boxing writer. He's got like 10 books. He's always doing great stories on people, and he's got a really good, interesting slant for every story. He's the one who went over to Boston and he spoke. He's from the UK. He went over and spoke to Jaylen and really kind of, he drew some incredible answers from him. And I spoke to him this afternoon, Donald. Uh-huh. And he said, what a fascinating guy. You know, he knows that I'm a Boston fan. So he said, you've really got an interesting athlete there. And I said to him, when he signed, and a lot of people were looking for the nickname, and a lot of people were reading into the fact that he studied where he studied, and, you know, he's into poetry, he reads books. I thought, okay, but I know a lot of people who read books, and is that how low the bar is for athletes nowadays, that that's considered intellectual brilliance? However, I read that today, and, you know, a couple of quotes here and there. I had started to think maybe he was the coolest player in the NBA because he's just oozes it, really, oozes coolness. But the intelligence really struck home today because he's thoughtful for such a young guy. I haven't really heard an athlete articulate the race relations, Trump, anything like that so brilliantly. So shout out to Jaylen Brown and a massive shout out to Donald McRae who put together the piece.
Well, speaking of writing, what are you guys working on? Anything you want to plug while we get you on here?
Well, I'm going to be in, as I've said, I'm going to be at NBA London. So I'm just going to be gathering as much content as I can from there. And then for various UK sites and also for Celtics Life, I'll be contributing as soon as I'm done doing that, hopefully with some pretty sweet content.
Well, you guys at Celtics Life were gracious enough to host me. I write for Celtics Hub. I did a quick little thing on the international side of the Celtics roster. They have, if you count Kyrie Irving, they have 6 international players, which not only is, I think, a Celtics franchise record, but is consistent with
I believe it is.
The NBA just continuing to integrate international talent. So if you're so inclined, head to Celtics Hub. I talked about Daniel Theis and Abdul Nader and all the other foreign-born players that are playing for the Celtics at the moment.
Oh, yeah, and I'm going to check that out. I also, sorry, I know I'm kind of crowbarring this in almost as a humble brag, but it's because I'm like an excited little boy. But this week, for a UK site, that I actually got to speak to various members of the Celtics roster and President Brad Stevens.
President Brad Stevens, if only!
But I got on a conference call, and he actually articulated something that I'm sure I'm going to read about in Cam's piece about the importance of the international influence in the game and things like that. So, yeah, it was a hell of an experience. So I'll be milking that for a while.
As you should. Well, I'm going to get us out of here. You guys have been very gracious with your time. And for me, it's just the afternoon. But I know for you guys, it's very early evening, or excuse me, very early morning and very late evening where you guys are respectively. I want to thank you guys for sticking it out and making this thing happen. I know it was a really big ask, and I really appreciate it. Check out the links at the top of CelticsLife.com. You knew that was coming. We have a very large variety of shirts and hoodies, Celtics oriented. Can't get them anywhere. They are distinct to CelticsLife.com. And you can even get tickets to, not the next game, because that's in London, and I'm pretty sure we don't have tickets available to that based on what you're telling me, Josh. You can find the pod on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and most podcatcher apps. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And if you like what you hear, please rate us 5 stars. If you don't like something or just have a suggestion, let us know in the comments of any article on CelticsLife.com or on Twitter for any of our own respective Twitter handles or the Celtics Life Twitter handle, or use the hashtag CLPOD, CLPOD. We're always trying to bring you the Celtics coverage you want, the way that you like it. Anything you guys want to say before we're out of here?
Yeah, just thanks for having me on. I'm really thankful. This was a really good conversation.
Yeah, likewise.
Thanks for having me, and I hope to hop back onto a Celtics Life pod again sometime soon.
Absolutely. The game is tomorrow. Hopefully we'll have this up before then, and I'll be watching it with y'all. Take care, y'all.